Hey everyone, how's it going? This is Azrin, the Language Nerd here. I'm the owner of the Calgary Language Nerds, and welcome to today's podcast episode. Yesterday, I went to a really fun event, and it was an event hosted by an organization that basically provides support to Francophones, so native French speakers, that have a business or are business professionals. It's pretty unique and unusual to find that kind of organization where I live, because I live in a very Anglophone city. We're all native English speakers here. There's not that much French in Alberta, which is my province. In fact, there is a recent Government of Canada census. There's recent Government of Canada census data that were released. And I think, if I remember the data correctly, I think when you look at the Francophones in Canada, only 3% of them are in Alberta, something like that. Or maybe it was only 3% of Albertans speak French. It's something like that. I can't exactly remember. But the punchline is, French is not very prevalent in my province, where I live in Canada. So I was quite surprised to see an organization which is for Francophones, and that has been around for quite some time, and is there to support them in their business and support them professionally. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So I went with one of my French instructors to a networking event they organized yesterday evening. And let me tell you, I was quite mentally conflicted when I walked into the event venue. The venue was a distillery owned by a Francophone, interestingly enough. And the moment I walked into the venue, I felt almost as if I'd stepped into another country. Because the second I walked in the door, all I heard around me from the 30-ish people that were there was French. I was greeted in French. I signed in French. It was a ticketed event, so they checked my ticket. They gave me a name tag that was pre-prepared. They gave me a drink ticket. Everything was done in French. Everyone's speaking in French. In fact, we even got a distillery tour from the owner of the distillery in French. Everything was French. Everybody was a native French speaker. And yet, when I look out the window, I'm clearly still in Calgary. It was a mentally conflicting experience. My brain thought I was in a French-speaking country, and yet I look out the window, and I'm clearly still in my home city. I've never had that experience. I've only ever been in small groups of Francophones, and yet it's just three or four of us, and we're in an English-speaking environment. This was almost like we shipped a French environment, we landed it in Calgary, and boom, it's almost like a new country within Calgary. I couldn't believe it. My brain was conflicted, to say the least. Now, at this event, I realized that I'm out of practice when it comes to French. I use my French regularly, don't get me wrong. I use it with my students. I use it with the Francophone instructors who work for me. We use it in meetings. I talk with them in French. I use French all the time. I correct people's writing in French. I write in French, at least to an extent, sometimes at least. And yet, I found myself out of practice at this event because maintaining a high degree of proficiency, this doesn't apply for beginners as much, applies somewhat to intermediates, really applies to advanced speakers. To maintain your level of fluency, you have to practice your language, your target language, in a variety of different social situations. It's not just, I'm going to practice with someone in private classes, or I'll just practice with my students, or in my case, I'll just practice with instructors who work with me, and I'll maintain it like that. That will work to an extent, but remember, you use your native language in so many different social situations. You speak with your significant other, your parents, you speak to kids, you go to events, you go to the pub, you go to restaurants, you talk with people when you check in at the airport, you talk with people when you buy a ticket to something, you're going to a movie, there's so many situations you use, at the doctor's office, there's so many situations where you use your first language. And you're always sort of practicing it. So if you want to maintain your high degree, your very fluent level in another language, in order to properly do that, you would have to hypothetically practice a wide variety of social situations and not just one or two social situations. And for me in French, I just speak with the instructors who work for me and with my students. That's only really two situations. And not to mention, this event that I went to might have been, I think it was, the very first large group French event that I've attended where Let's put it this way. It's the first networking event I've ever attended in French. Let's put it that way. Where there's 30-ish people, you don't really know anyone except for my one friend. And you're meeting all sorts of different people, and everyone's talking to you, and you're talking to everyone. You're meeting people from different backgrounds, different lines of work. They're asking you questions. Your people have their wine. Some people are dressed up a little bit. I've never had that experience, I think, as an adult. At least I've rarely had it at a minimum. And I was out of practice. Now, when you're out of practice in a language you're very fluent in, the way it comes across is not that you're learning the language. You just come across as slightly awkward, which is perhaps worse. Perhaps that's worse than making mistakes in the language. Because at least if you make mistakes, someone can go, well, they're trying, good for them. But if you're very fluent and it's a slightly different social situation, you just come across as slightly awkward. And so they might think, that's a slightly awkward human being. So what I was doing, and this is something I've done a lot with languages that are not my first language. In fact, even my first language, I've done this before. I emulate the behavior of someone else that I know that navigates that situation very well. So I'll give you an example. And when I was in France for the first time, my French exchange student's mom, this is 15 plus years ago, his mom was very friendly, and I would emulate her behavior when I was in France, when I was in social situations. I would emulate her in some, I'd emulate my French exchange student in others. Like if I was with people my own age, I would emulate my Francophone exchange student. I would emulate his behavior. I would talk like him. I'd kind of act like him. And when I was with talking to other adults and such, I would do a mixture of my French exchange student and my French exchange student's mom. And that would help me figure out how I should communicate. So when I was at the event yesterday, I was emulating a couple of people that I know, that I was picturing them. And that was helping me to sound more natural and not come across as super awkward or make too many mistakes, get tongue-tied, stutter, freeze up and not talk at all for the event. And that was helpful. I don't think I did a perfect job. There were certain circumstances where I think I was slightly awkward, more than I would be in English. There's one lady who asked me, so what do you do for work? And I don't even know what my brain was thinking. And for some reason, my brain was like, oh yeah, I don't work. And I was like, what the, literally I thought to myself, what the fuck are you doing? What do you mean? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, brain, yo, you jammed, you bugged. What is going on? And then I kind of laughed like I was joking. And I was like, haha, just joking. And then I just, and then I explained what I did. But my initial reaction, I don't know what my brain was thinking. I basically said, yeah, I don't work. No. And I was like, what? What are you doing, brain? Okay. But so generally did well, but there were a couple awkward situations like that. A couple, one or two. So that's something I recommend for you. It's actually, I've never been able to articulate this exactly the way I am now. I've always thought that it's really important for language learners to have regular interaction with native speakers, or at least very advanced speakers at a minimum. The more, the better. And I've struggled in the past because clearly you don't have to do that all the time in order to achieve some level of proficiency in the language. And yet I still feel like, hey, it's really important. You should do that. And I realized yesterday one of the reasons for it is the more native speakers you know, the more models you have in your brain to copy, to emulate, to imitate. When you're with people in another language that have a different culture, you're unsure of how you should behave. If you know three native speakers and you've seen them behave in a similar social situation, at least in the back of your mind, whether consciously or unconsciously, you can copy what you've seen someone else do and behave kind of like them. So that's why for me, it's so important. I always try to interact with native fluent speakers or native speakers, because both can kind of work. A very fluent speaker is going to also emulate what the native speakers would do, so that'll do the trick in many cases, especially if they have excellent pronunciation, they've traveled to the country, so on and so forth. But that's really important, and it'll make communicating a lot easier. So I wanted to start the podcast off with that story because it's recent, it's fresh. I came home exhausted because my brain was working on overtime. That's what happens when you're in those kinds of situations, by the way. It's so good for the brain, I think, and really good for your proficiency overall. And, yeah. That's why I wanted to start this podcast off. Changing gears, as always, roughly halfway through, I like to change gears and talk more about some personal development related things. So this one is a big one. I shared it on Instagram, my LinkedIn. By the way, I have a LinkedIn if you guys don't follow me. Same username as always, just Azarin the Language Nerd, you'll find me. But I shared on my LinkedIn, my Instagram, my Facebook. I've been sharing this everywhere because I think this can be an unlock for a lot of people, both with your languages, but also outside of languages. And it has to do with goal setting. I might have said this once on the podcast before, but I'm not sure if I have. And even if I have, it was just once sometime in the past. So for 12 years, I've been setting different goals. I've set personal goals and I've set professional goals. And usually when I've set goals, I've set very small goals. I set these tiny goals that I feel 95% sure that I can hit. And the reason I've done that is because when you set a goal, you create an external judge. Meaning, if you're moving towards the goal, or if you achieve the goal, you're going to feel excited and you're going to feel successful. Excited and successful. Proud of yourself, maybe. However, if things are not going well, you're not progressing towards the goal, and, well, maybe you're even going farther away from the goal, then you're going to feel disappointed and frustrated. So I didn't like the feeling of setting a big goal and then getting very disappointed when I wasn't moving towards it, or it didn't look like I was going to achieve it. And in fact, the bigger the goal, the more I would feel disappointed and the more I would feel hopeless. Because it was too big. So I would set these small goals. So I felt reasonably confident I can hit them and I would be able to regulate my positive and negative emotions. Now the problem I faced, I would say, well, recently, let's just say, I don't know exactly when, probably this year, maybe even a couple years ago, I started to experience this problem, but I've only consciously realized it recently. The problem I was facing is my progress was so slow with my business or with a variety of things, not just business, but in my life, with things I wanted to get better at and goals I wanted to achieve. I was moving so slowly that it would have taken me way too long to hit the desired result. So here are some examples. I've wanted to be in excellent shape since 2016. It's now been 8 years. I'm in much better shape, way better shape than 2016, one brick at a time, one step at a time, one baby step at a time. And that's worked. But when I look back, I think to myself, I'm not eight. I could have done so much more over the past 8 years. And again, the reason I've not done what I could have done was because I didn't want to set big goals because I'd feel very disappointed and frustrated if I wasn't making progress. In fact, recently, I would say roughly 6 to 12 months ago, I went through a period where I was riding this emotional roller coaster that wasn't very fun to ride. I was riding an emotional roller coaster that wasn't fun to ride. I was setting bigger goals than I typically would. I would work really hard and get super excited when I made progress, like, woohoo! And then when something would go wrong, I would crash and I would feel really bad, disappointed, frustrated, anxious even. To take that a step further, I would even feel anxious when I was progressing because I was scared of moving backwards. And I would feel anxious when I was not progressing because I was anxious about not progressing. So that sucks. You progress and you feel anxious, and you don't progress and you feel anxious. That's just a terrible situation to be in. So I had to find a better way. This was not a good framework for the reasons I've already mentioned. So what did I do? I found a new framework, and this one is in way better for me. What I've decided to do, and I highly recommend you do this too for your languages as well as for other goals you're trying to reach. When you succeed, in other words, you hit a goal, or maybe you're progressing towards a goal, don't get excited. Don't feel happy. Keep yourself emotionally neutral as you can. Don't get excited, happy, feel successful when you hit goals. And Don't feel disappointed and frustrated when you're not progressing, or if you're failing, or if you're missing your goals. Instead, what you do is you attach your emotional well-being to the action steps that you decided you would need to take in order to hit the goal. So I'll give you an example. I'm learning to swim, as I've said at least a couple of times on the podcast. I never learned as a child because I had a phobia of water. And now as an adult, I'm learning to swim. I decided that I would take one swimming lesson a week. In fact, in November, I'm going to switch it to 2 swimming lessons a week. Sometimes I go to the lessons and I do really well. I progress a lot. I have a great lesson. Sometimes I go to the lessons and it doesn't go as well. It's a bit more frustrating, or I clearly see where I have skill gaps. For me, regardless of how well the lesson goes, as long as I show up to the lesson and I try my best, I give myself a high five. I say, good job. Woohoo! I let myself get excited and happy about it. And that's because I decided that what I would have to do, when I thought about learning to swim, I thought, how would I learn to swim? Well, I'll take one lesson a week, and now in November I have 2 lessons a week. Well, if I take my lessons, I'll be able to learn to swim. That seems to be the best pathway forward to learning to swim. I don't know if that's true, by the way. I've never learned to swim before. I'm taking an educated guess as to what I think will work. And as I've done this, I've realized certain things. Like I've realized I took lessons with one company and I realized that's a terrible idea to take it with that company. They have their lessons in hotel pools and they're so small. I can't learn to swim in a pool like that. I didn't know. So there's certain things I did that were not quite right, but I've adjusted. But roughly from initially, I thought to myself, the best plan of attack I could think of is take lessons once a week, twice a week, attend my lessons, try my best, and that should work. As long as I do that, I feel happy. Now, the successes and the failures along the way serve to educate me as to what I should do differently in the future. So when I am at a swimming lesson, so here's an example. I took swim lessons with this one company, and it was frustrating because the pool was so small, and the instructor was not super skilled. So I was learning, but it was but I realized by doing that I shouldn't take lessons with the company. That was kind of like a failure in a sense. It was like a half success. I learned a bit of swimming, but the pool's tiny, there's kids everywhere, it's loud, I can't even do a quarter length because it's so small. So that's like a failure. So I learned from it. I thought, okay, well, don't take lessons with that company. Now I'm taking lessons with another company and we have a proper pool, they're highly skilled instructors. And so I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. Okay, I'm gonna take more lessons with them. So I learned from the success, I'm doing more of what's worked, less of what didn't work. But emotionally, the whole time, I've not been disappointed at all. I've been very happy. Why? Because I go to my classes and I try my best. My emotional well-being is attached to the only thing I can really control, which is my actions. I can't control the result. I'm trying to learn a skill I've never learned before. I actually don't know how good I could be because I've never tried before. With your languages, if you're learning a language and you want to get to a very fluent level, you actually don't know how fluent you can get. You actually don't know. You've never done it before. You don't know. You don't know how to get there. You don't know what's going to work for you. You don't know what's not going to work for you. Therefore, all you're doing is taking an educated guess of what should work. You're thinking about it and going, well, I think this is the steps I should take. And you're guessing. So why would you get disappointed when your guess was wrong? You didn't know any better. That's why you need to attach all of your positive and negative emotion on, did you follow through on the steps that you thought you would need to take to reach whatever level that you're trying to reach in your language? And then the successes and failures along the way serve as teachers. They're just showing you what not to do and what to do. Success means do more of it. Failure means don't do as much. Don't do as much of that. I tried that, didn't work very well. Okay, now I know. Maybe don't do so much of that. I tried this. Oh, that seems to work. Okay, do some more of that. But your emotions don't get wrapped up in success and failure. That's been a big unlock for me because now I can set bigger goals than I did before. because it doesn't matter if I hit it or miss. I don't feel sad or happy, disappointed or excited, frustrated or elated. I don't feel anything when I hit, miss, or otherwise. All that matters is I make the best plan I can think of and I follow that plan. And as long as I follow the plan, high five, good job, Azarin. And then I learn from the successes and failures. But there's no emotion with success and failure. It's been really big for me. I can set bigger goals now without being scared of missing. I'm way more emotionally level-headed. I always have been emotionally level-headed, but that's just because I'm good at managing my emotions and perspective, but now I'm even better. So yeah, I wanted to share that with you guys on the podcast, and hopefully that's helpful. I have a class that starts in 5 minutes, so I'm going to let you guys go. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your guys' day, and we'll chat soon. Bye-bye.